listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, Barclays Bank just showed a huge profit. It was down from previous, but so what are they doing? They're cutting 12,000 people off their payroll. They had 12,000 extra people? Really? Jenny Yellen has testified before Congress, no surprises from the new head of the Fed, which Wall Street thinks is good. Yesterday, we went through how we are paying the average person making $50,000 a year pays $22.88 toward federal unemployment insurance in their taxes and $4,000 a year in corporate subsidies. I promised you the detailed breakdown on that, and then we got Marianne on in the third hour and just never got to it, so I'm going to get to that today. There's some very, very interesting climate news. It's just a lot going on, actually. The Rubini Monitor, some stuff about the future of our economy. But meanwhile, Eric Holder, and whether this is Eric Holder's legacy or whether this is just Eric Holder doing something that he thinks is right, or whether this, you know, I don't know if this is a change in position for this administration, but he is pointing out that we have states in the United States, and it's not all of the states, but it's a bunch of them, where in Florida, Iowa, and Kentucky, all felons lose all their rights to vote. And then in Tennessee, Mississippi, and Alabama, some felons lose their right to vote. And then in New York, California, Colorado, et cetera, once you're on probation, you can vote. And parolees can vote in most of the rest of the country. It's kind of a mishmash. And so Eric Holder is saying, and he points out, I mean, this is from their news release, states like Florida, Kentucky, and Virginia, as many as one in five black adults have been stripped of voting rights. He said it's time, this is a quote from Eric Holder himself, he said, the Attorney General of the United States of America, he says it's time to fundamentally rethink laws that permanently disenfranchise people who are no longer under federal or state supervision. These restrictions are not only unnecessary and unjust, they are also counterproductive. By perpetuating the stigma and isolation imposed on formerly incarcerated individuals, these laws increase the likelihood that they will commit future crimes. At worst, these laws, with this disparate impact on minority communities, echo policies enacted during a deeply troubled period in America's past, a time of post-Civil War discrimination. And they have their roots in centuries-old conceptions of justice that were too often based on exclusion, animus, and fear. So Eric Holder, of course, himself African-American, speaking about the impact of that on African-Americans. Horace Cooper is himself African-American and a conservative commentator and an attorney, a commentator and senior fellow with the National Center for Public Policy Research, nationalcenter.org. And Horace, welcome back to the program.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah. I'm curious your thoughts on this. It seems that the conservative position. I mean, historically, conservatives have been all about, you know, like David Vitter, you know, after he got busted with a hooker, he apologized, he promised never to do it again, he confessed his sins, and he got a standing ovation from his conservative colleagues, the Republicans in the United States Senate, when he walked back into the Senate chamber after that. Now he's running for governor. It seems like the conservative position is to say, you've paid your debt to society, you have paid your price, you've served your time, you've been through probation, you are now embraced back by society again. Would it not be?
I think that's generally true. I'm just not clear on the example that you use of what prison was Senator Vitter assigned to, and how long did he serve, and when would...
Well, that's one of the things. He was a rich, powerful white guy, so he never was prosecuted. But he did confess to a crime.
He did confess
to the crime.
O.J. Simpson was a rich, powerful black guy, but he was prosecuted, but he managed to beat the charge, too. And were
right.
he to have kept his nose clean instead of engaging in future criminality, he would have been allowed to go forward.
Well,
not,
did you just say Bill Clinton?
Holder. No, I said O.J. Simpson.
Oh, O.J. Simpson. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, he had to deal with a civil lawsuit.
I think it's divisive, and I think it's intended to create the false impression that the criminal justice system actually singles out minorities for treatment that's unfair.
Well, you know, apropos, Horace, if I may interrupt you for a second for an actual thoughtful conversation here. You mentioned O.J. Simpson, and I don't know if you're familiar with the book, you know, When the Irish Became White.
But, I'm not, sorry.
Okay, well, the basic premise of the book, and I think it's a really fascinating anthropological, sociological analysis, is that, quote, whiteness in America has been defined a whole lot of different ways over the years, and there were long periods in American history where Irish were not considered white, where Jews were not considered white, where Catholics were not considered white, where poor people were not considered white, that white really was a socioeconomic designation, not as much a racial designation. During the 1890s, the Italian immigrants were not considered white. So O.J. Simpson, being very wealthy, might be considered, if you put it through a purely socioeconomic lens, part of that white class, in quotes, that used to be all about race, that now is more about class and income. What do you think?
That's an interesting insight. What I find most attractive about it is that it demonstrates that the actual pigment isn't necessarily going to be the determinative factor of your status in American society. But I think Mr. Holder's idea of pursuing this as if this is the big problem facing our nation is designed more to energize disaffected groups into thinking that there's this unjust system in operation. And if we can set aside the so-called war on drugs and talk about felony prosecutions in general, that's rape, that's robbery, breaking and entering with a value loss of a couple thousand dollars. There are a couple of jurisdictions where that's as little as $250, but in most of them it's over a few thousand dollars in damage. When one looks at this, you'd have to be arguing that the police simply are uninterested in felonious behavior on the part of the white elites.
Well, that's true if you look at drug arrest statistics.
Pardon me?
If you look at drug arrest statistics, whites and African-American, whites are more likely to use pot than African-Americans, but African-Americans are eight times more likely to get arrested for it.
Yeah, I said let's set aside the war on drugs. I think that takes us down a rabbit hole. I'm just talking about felony activity in general.
Okay.
And in order to get a felony drug arrest, the amount has to be actually significantly high. So, but
depending
you don't
on the
have
state.
To do that for, it depends on the state, that's true. But you don't have to do that with regard to breaking and entering or robbery or rape or
right.
other kinds
no,
of.
No, I got, Horace, pardon my interrupting you, but I just got a 1 minute cue from Shane. We
sure.
have hard breaks. In this minute we have left, what should we do with people after they've paid their debt to society? Should we let them vote or not?
Well, it depends on the state. I have no problem with a petition basis, and I have no problem with a system that says in this state they'll let you automatically do it. I guess I do have a problem with places like Vermont that let you vote even absentee even while sitting in the prison.
Why? You're still a member of society.
But yet your actions demonstrate that you didn't appreciate that.
Right, but you're paying your price.
Some of these places, people pay their price. Others of these places, it's a lengthy time out.
Vermont might do that because Matthew Lyon got, you know, John Adams sent Matthew Lyon to jail, and he sat in a Vermont jail cell and ran and successfully for re-election in the election of 1800. I don't know. Horace Cooper, it's always an interesting conversation. Nationalcenter.org is the website. Horace, thanks for being with us today. Horace? He's already gone. Okay. Anyhow, we'll be back. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So do you think felons should have their voting rights restored once they have completed their sentence and their parole or not? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and international star of television and radio, Nate Sweet, on the line with us, producer with The Big Picture. Hey, Nate.
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Very well, thank you. And you?
I'm doing great.
Great. We're going to start out with a rant about how the founders would be horrified if they ever, if somebody were to whisper to Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, or even Jefferson's bitter political enemies like Hamilton and Adams, that someday a president, all of whom, well, Hamilton had aspirations, got cut short by a bullet, but Adams certainly was second president of the United States. If you were to say, and Madison was fourth, if you were to say to any of them, hey, someday a president of the United States will claim the right to kill American citizens without judge, jury, trial, etc., they would run screaming out of the room, I would say.
I think they would. I think what we're touching back is, the Obama administration right now is considering using a drone strike to take out an American citizen.
Right. Now it continuing a Bush administration policy.
Right. And I think that's the thing. A lot of people, when they talk about the drone issue, talk about it as Obama's drone war and as a war on terror issue. But it's really bigger than that. It's sort of a symbolic of the general changes in the executive branch and the power of the military that we've seen over the last half century since the Cold War. And I think that's the angle we're going to try to look at it.
And it particularly went on steroids in 2001 after September 11th. So that will be, of course, the first question that we ask Vince Colonnais, the executive editor of The Daily Caller, you, and George Landreth, the president of Frontiers of Freedom, conservative think tank.
It should be a great panel today. We'll be talking about the drone issue. We'll also be talking about John Boehner has indicated that the House is going to vote in a clean debt limit bill. They're actually going to vote on it later on this afternoon, so I'll keep on top of that. We'll be talking about the controversy surrounding Arkansas's private Medicaid expansion. They sort of got an exemption from the normal Medicaid expansion procedure under Obamacare as a way to please conservatives. And now many of those same conservatives are saying that even that's not enough. So it sort of presents some interesting quandaries about what exactly conservatives want from Obamacare and healthcare in general.
Well, they want it to go away.
Right, exactly. I think that's what they chose.
Unless it was Romney who was president, in which case they would want to call it Romneycare and keep it, because, hey, it works so well in Massachusetts.
Yeah, and I think this is the irony here, is that, this is just another – they to get them – to make these conservatives in Arkansas happy about the Medicaid expansion, they basically just allowed the Medicaid money to be used on the exchanges, something Republicans came up with to begin with under Romneycare and the Heritage Foundation, but even that wasn't good enough for Republicans. So there's some weird, complicated, bizarre stuff going on there. We'll also be talking about what you were just talking with Horace about, which is the Eric Holder calling for the restoration of felon voting rights. Some interesting issues at play that are not just the war on drugs, but whether or not there's sort of a modern-day three-fifths compromise going on with certain jurisdictions. And then we'll be talking about these ongoing protests in North Carolina, the Moral Monday protests. They've been ignored by the mainstream media. We'll try to get to the bottom of that. But we'll also talk about, in general, how what's going on in North Carolina is sort of symbolic of the post-Citizens United United States.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then we've got an Olympics update that I pre-recorded, actually, earlier today with Paul Scott.
We talked to Paul Scott over in Sochi. We got the latest update. And we'll have a breakdown of what stories viewers should expect to be paying attention to over the next couple weeks.
And then a piece about the end of snow?
Yeah, there's a very good chance that the vast majority of the 19 Winter Olympic locations won't be able to hold the Winter Olympics by the end of the century.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Nate Sweet. Thanks a lot, Nate.
Thanks, Tom.
Good talking to you. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back, Tom Harmon here with you. I pointed out yesterday, I was quoting this post from Facebook.com/bitchypundit and the Google Plus group Bitchy Pundit, but it was based on statistics from the WhiteHouse.gov 2012-tax receipt website and an article in Common Dreams that was published in September of last year by Paul Buchheit, titled Add It Up, The Average American Family Pays $6,000 a Year in Subsidies to Big Business. I quoted $4,000 yesterday. I was somewhat downplaying it, because it actually, you don't pay that $6,000, all of it, in the form of taxes. Somebody called up and said, hey, give me a breakdown on these numbers. And I said, I don't have the actual numbers in front of me. I will get that during the break. And then I got it during the break, but that was the break followed by which we had Marianne Williamson on for an hour taking your calls. And so it's still sitting here in front of me on my desk from yesterday afternoon. I want to share the numbers with you because, people want to know. Inquiring minds want to know. So we're paying $22.88 a year. If you make $50,000 a year, the more or less average household income in the United States, or median household income in the United States, you make $50,000 a year, you pay about $23 a year, $23 for the entire year toward the federal unemployment insurance program. And the Republicans just filibustered a bill in the Senate to extend long-term unemployment benefits and restore them to people that got cut off 3 days after Christmas by the Republicans, you know, last year, to restore those. By one vote, this thing failed to break a filibuster. So the Republicans just filibustered extending those long-term unemployment benefits, and now we're creeping up past 1.6 million Americans who are screwed. I mean, really badly screwed, looking at homelessness. So you pay roughly $23 a year toward that. And if we raise that tax, you might pay $24 a year toward that. And that would easily cover $24, $25 a year. That would easily cover all of the, you know, all of the people who are unemployed right now. You spend $4 a year for FEMA. Not much. You spend about $37 a year for food stamps, which is, you know, a lot more than it was 8 years ago before the great Bush crash. But still, I mean, you got hungry people. You spend $7 a year for welfare out of your taxes. $235 for Medicare, a couple $1,000 towards Social Security. But that's money that, in a way, is going to cycle back to you. You spend roughly $250 a year for defense. And I pointed out yesterday, you pay $4,000 a year in corporate subsidies. So the Republicans are all huffing and puffing, and they're upset about the fact that we pay $23 a year for unemployment insurance, and we might have to pay $24 a year, but we're paying $4,000 a year in corporate subsidies. Well, Paul Buchheit broke this out. It's amazing. He says the title is added up. The average American family pays $6,000 a year in subsidies to big business. He says if you're making over $72,000, you're paying more than that. Here's how it breaks out. According to the Cato Institute, you, if you are making $50,000 a year, if you're the average, median, or slightly above median household income, you're spending, here's how it breaks out, $870 for direct subsidies and grants per year that you're paying. Now, keep in mind, you know, unemployment insurance is arguably a direct security and grant. You're paying $23 for that. You're paying $870 in direct subsidies and grants. This is in the form of, and I quote, cash payments to farmers, research funds to high-tech companies, funding for overseas promotion of specific U.S. products and industries, does not include tax preferences or trade restrictions. What it does include are payments to 374 individuals in the plush Upper East Side of New York City and others who own farms, including Bruce Springsteen, Bon Jovi, and Ted Turner. Wealthy heir Mark Rockefeller received $342,000 to not farm his Idaho land. Michelle Bachmann gets some of this money. Right, okay. This is a direct side. It also includes fossil fuel subsidies between $10 and $41 billion a year for R&D. These may be substantially underestimated. The IMF reports U.S. fossil fuel subsidies at $502 billion a year, which means fossil fuels alone. If you're making $50,000 a year, you're subsidizing the fossil fuel industry to the tune of $4,400 per U.S. family. Now, you may not be paying all of that on your taxes right now. Instead, it's going into the U.S. budget deficit. Eventually, it will have to be paid with taxes. Okay, so that's $870 that you're paying in direct subsidies and grants to companies. Then there are $696 that you are paying in business incentives at the state, county, and city levels. Yep, people making $50,000 a year pay state, federal, and state, county, and city taxes. New York Times investigation found the states, counties, and cities, this is Paul Buchheit, gave up over $80 billion to corporations last year. Including oil and coal conglomerates, technology and entertainment companies, banks, and big box retailers. $80 billion is $696 for every U.S. family. Okay, $722 a year you are paying if you make $50,000 a year in interest rate subsidies to banks. The U.S. government essentially gives the banks 3 cents out of every tax dollar. So The wealthiest five banks, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, and Goldman Sachs, account for three-quarters of that total subsidy. So you are subsidizing the banks to the tune of $722 a year. $350 a year is going to fund retirement retirement fund bank fees. Demos came up with this. Overpriced medications, that's $1,268 a year. Government-granted monopoly prices raise the price of prescription drugs by $270 billion a year compared to a free market price. This represents an astonishing $2,000 to the average American family. $870 a year in corporate tax subsidies, this from the Tax Foundation. Citizens for Tax Justice estimates that it's actually $1,600 per family. And $1,231 in revenue loss from corporate tax havens.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And that's pretty amazing. You consider, you know, Apple has all these Irish subsidiaries where they're paying 2% taxes instead of, you know, paying taxes here. Right. It's Talk Media for the rest of us, the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. Oh, this is very interesting. The New York Times tracked down Michael Sam's father, who he has been estranged from since he was a kid, who seems to have a problem with his son being gay. This is kind of sad. This is anyhow. It's such stories make the front page of the New York Times. So, but this, Michael Sam, he's going to get through this. This is a guy that is changing. He's helping change the world for the better, in my opinion. Okay, these entitlements. I told you about the entitlements. We went through this lending by shadow banks last week and the Ukraine last week. This is an interesting piece. You know, it's past the bottom of the hour. It's 25-2. Maybe I should just pick up phone calls. There are a couple of things that I'm going to share with you today. Let me just give you a preview. These are really interesting. These are social sciences pieces. One, money makes people right-wing and inegalitarian. The more money you make, the more right-wing you become, and the less willing you are to share. This is interesting. This is from Science Reports. Mounting evidence links lead's toxic effects to criminal behavior. Why is crime down from 30 years ago? Because we stopped putting lead in the gasoline 30 years ago. And so the people who were little kids then did not grow up lead poisoned. I have two really cool things from Addicting Info. 50 signs you watch too much Fox News and 15 things everyone would know if there was a liberal media that I want to get to. Financial Times yesterday had a piece about how the headline is sugar debate turns sour for food groups. And what it's all about is that they're now seriously linking sugar to diseases like cancer and heart attacks and strokes and all kinds of metabolic disorders, not just diabetes. And they're saying, you know, should we tax this to recover the cost the way we tax tobacco, the way we tax alcohol, the way that we tax in some places, Denmark, for example, taxes petroleum products. Oh, and Bitcoin crashed. They discovered a bug in the software, a way to exploit it, and all of a sudden, Bitcoin is not the hottest new thing in the world. Very interesting. I'm going to get into this Janet Yellen thing, and let me just give you one sentence from this blog that Peter Wadhams, who's been on this program, contributes to. He's a professor in the UK of climate science. And first of all, they're talking about today's blog. This is the Arctic News blog. Today's blog is talking about the methane coming out of Greenland. Methane? Greenland? Really? Yes. And then here's just a sentence that we'll return to later on. Quote, the world is probably at the start of a runaway greenhouse event which will end most human life on Earth before 2040. This will occur because of a massive and rapid increase in the carbon dioxide concentration in the air, which has just accelerated very significantly. So, I think that is an overstatement. 2040, end of humanity. But the idea that there is a real problem here is something we need to take seriously. And just like with smoking, I mean, you know, the tobacco companies held this thing off for the better part of 50 years. They lied to us. They knew that tobacco killed people. They knew it was addictive. They knew it caused cancer. And not just lung cancer, a whole variety of cancers. A friend of mine died of mouth cancer as a result of smoking. In fact, it took out the bottom of his lip. You know, this is just, and they lied about it. And you had Ronnie Reagan on TV smoking Pall Mells, as I recall, saying, you know, in a doctor's outfit, saying, you know, what doctors do when they get a sore throat? They smoke Pall Mells. And, I mean, I remember that as a little kid, right? This was in the 50s. And all those years, we finally said, oh, really? And we started fighting back. Now these same, in many cases, the exact same, quote, scientists, end quote, and the exact same, if not the lobbyists, the lobbying groups that were lobbying for big tobacco 20, 30 years ago are now lobbying for ain't no such thing as climate change, no droids in this car, you know, look away, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, and we talked about should felons have voting rights. Bob in Sacramento wants to weigh in on that one. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, it's been a long time since I've spoken to you. I've been away in the Illinois State Penitentiary for a few years.
Oh, my.
Over medical cannabis.
Really?
Yes, sir.
What happened? Was,
as you know, California has had legal medical cannabis for many years, and
right.
Rhode Island had just legalized. So I took it upon myself to drive a trunkload full of medicine to Rhode Island.
From California.
From California.
Well, that you had to drive that trunkload full of medicine through a whole bunch of states that don't consider it medicine.
That's true, and I knew I was taking a risk. And unfortunately, when I got to LaSalle County, Illinois, I come to find out that they post up looking for out-of-state plates, and they pull over everyone they can, and they search you with or without reason. In my case, the officer said he smelled cannabis through two vacuum seals, inside duffel bags, inside the trunk of the car, past a stinky dog standing next to the freeway outside the car.
He had a canine with him, and the canine didn't detect it?
No. He, super cop, smelled it himself.
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay.
You see, yeah. It's, a dog couldn't have smelled it. And in fact, the dog evidence would have been thrown out because of the dog in the car.
So the result of that was that they threw you in the can.
The result of that was I spent 3 years at the in the hospitality of the Illinois Department of Correction.
Wow. What was that like,
and,
if you don't mind my asking?
It was low-level torture, very low-level, because I was in what they considered to be a minimum security prison.
Right.
And but you sleep on bare metal with not enough padding to even remotely make you think you're not sleeping on bare metal.
Right.
I mean, it's insulated from the cold, but other than that, it was no cushion whatsoever. And I'm a 61-year-old man, and as you may imagine, the aches and pains of age increased significantly while I was in those conditions.
I can imagine.
And I was living in a bathroom, of course, in a toilet. The toilet was in the room. I lived with one other person through the whole time. Was not, despite many requests, was not able to acquire an in-prison job or in-prison schooling. Then they decided to hold that against me in parole. You know, you didn't do anything, you know. So,
right.
It's a compound of negative effects.
That's bizarre. Was this a private prison or was it a state prison?
Oh, no. It was Illinois Department of Correction.
Yeah.
The state of Illinois basically extorted, $5,000 in legal fees to a private attorney. It wasn't the state, but, you know,
right.
And I got off cheap for $5,000.
Right.
They took what would basically $200,000 in wholesale value of cannabis from me.
Right.
And destroyed it.
Right.
They took $12,000 in cash and my car.
Right.
Destroyed my computer and threatened to kill my dog. Fortunately, somebody adopted her until she died of old age.
Right. Well, that amount of cannabis, pretty much anywhere qualifies you as a dealer.
Well, yes, and that's true. To a, you know,
that's a hell of a chance you took, Bob.
Well, of course it is, Tom, but that's what a freedom fighter does. I mean, to some degree, I've been dealing in medical cannabis since before it was legal in California.
So were you planning on making a political statement when you got to Rhode Island with us, or just were you looking at a business opportunity? You were going to hook up with a clinic or something? I mean, what was...
Well, I didn't know for sure. I knew one or two people in Rhode Island who lived there, and I wasn't sure what the laws were going to be when I got there, so it was either going to be... I've given a great deal of medical cannabis away at no charge. It's not like everything is about money. I'm an old hippie, not much unlike yourself, and I'm egalitarian, unlike the mega rich folks that you were just discussing.
Yeah.
And I'm so I didn't know whether it was going to be something that I would make a significant profit on, or whether it was just going to be a bona fide to help become a producer in the new state.
Right.
It was a feeler expedition is what it really was.
Fascinating. Bob, we only have about a half a minute left. Just a heads
up. Anyway, I think I should vote. And, I think the drug war needs to end immediately.
Yeah.
And so forth and so on. Because, as I said, I've been doing medical cannabis since I had a large gay clientele in the early 90s, because of the neighborhood I lived in, artsy fartsy musicians and actors and painters and such, lots of gays, and I knew lots of AIDS people. And
medical cannabis helps people who are on therapy for AIDS?
Significantly. It lets them eat.
Yeah, yeah. I have seen it with cancer patients and chemotherapy. This stuff works. Bob, I'm very sorry to hear about your lost 3 years. I'm really glad that you're back. Thanks for calling us. Great talking with you. I wish you all the very best. Hope to hear from you again. We'll be back. It is 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
By the way, Gretchen Blyler is going to be with us in our second hour. She's a two-time Olympian, silver medalist, five-time X Games medalist. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's see here. Chris in Sunfield, Michigan, watching Free Speech TV on the DirecTV satellite system. Hey, Chris, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today? Chris, you got to listen to your phone, not your TV, because there's, we introduce a few seconds of delay here as an obscenity filter, and then it takes almost a half a minute to make it to bounce a signal all the way to Denver, and then up to the satellite, and then down from the satellite, and then to your house. Or if you have your phone on mute. Chris, you there?
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Great. So what's on your mind today?
First thing is in Michigan, there you've got two referendums on schedule for increasing the minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
It's been sent to the Secretary of State. The Raise Michigan Coalition is starting that one.
Okay.
Also, part-time legislature has been approved, and they're going out and getting votes or signatures for that.
To convert the legislature from a full-time job to a part-time job?
Yes, sir.
What would be the benefit of that? What would be the benefit of that?
I don't know yet, but as far as me, Tom, as being an independent for 40 years, I can see benefits.
Uh-huh.
This is an R&D state, and if I wanted to run for Carl Levin's seat right now or Senator Levin's seat, I would have to double the amount of registered certified signatures of any Republican or Democrat. That's the first thing.
Because you're not a member of the party.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it was written in by the Republican and Democrat parties.
Sure.
They like it that way.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the duopoly works well for them.
Okay, we'll drop that. Next, your statement about H.R. 6407, stick it to the postal workers.
Right.
Every Democrat voted for that. You said just some of them.
Well, okay, at the time, I mean, I think it was Henry Waxman. We had one of the Democrats on here, and I asked them, why'd you vote for this? And they said, we had no idea that that was in there. That was not in there when it went through the House. It was not in there when it went through the Senate initially. It was put in during conference committee. Bills come out of conference committee, and they're typically voted on very, very quickly. And it's the obligation of the conference committee to tell the two respective bodies about any changes of consequence they've made. And in this case, the conference committee didn't do that. And so this was a truly a dirty deal.
Talking about the H-1B visa that's been handed out, the GAO has got a heck of a report outlining that.
Okay.
Okay, everybody should read that.
All right. You want to give us the highlights?
It breaks down everything about it.
You want to give us any highlights?
About circumventing some of the qualifications for the people that they're bringing in. Some of them are not even qualified.
Right.
The outside corporations that are bringing these people in are trying to open up hubs so they can train these individuals, take the work back to wherever, whatever country it is, and there's several corporations doing this, and they outline this right through it.
And the government outlined this.
Yeah, GAO.
Yeah.
They got a heck of a report on it. I think everybody should read that.
This is, one variation on this whole, the whole outsourcing thing, the whole, the tragedy of our jobs, Chris. It's
and
just...
you brought Chuck Nagel into the mix here about 3-4 weeks ago about being the Secretary of State.
Right.
Hey, he's a sweet-talking guy for Hillary.
Yeah, he's Secretary of Defense, isn't he?
All the way to the White House.
Yeah. Chuck Nagel was a Republican. He started out as a right-wing talk show host, and then he became the president of a voting machine company. And then he ran for Senate and, surprise, won even neighborhoods that had never voted Republican. Those nice machines. Chris, thank you for the call. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be back. Before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Viagra for your brain. Just don't tell Limbaugh he'll want some. It's a, does not cause stiff thinking. CJ in Bluffton, South Carolina. CJ, voter felon bans are unconstitutional?
Yeah, actually, this is my second call. But according to the 13th Amendment, which reads, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction.
Right.
Well, when you get sent to prison in this country, that you get made to conduct to perform involuntary servitude. And the 15th Amendment clearly states that the right of the citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. So if you've been sentenced to a term in prison, which is de facto a sentence of involuntary servitude,
right.
15th Amendment says that cannot be held against you for right to vote. So technically, by that argument, it's over.
Yeah, and it's actually it's a single sentence. The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. And then, of course, as you pointed out, the 13th Amendment says neither slavery nor involuntary servitude except as a punishment for crime shall exist within the United States. Brilliant. Brilliant. So you're saying that under the 13th and 15th Amendments, a state banning felons from voting after they have after they're no longer in a position of servitude, in other words, after they have finished their imprisonment and their parole, is a violation of the Constitution.
Well, actually, even if you're on parole, which in some places doesn't really exist anymore, they've got a federal style system where you serve 80%. We have to serve a mandatory 85% of a fixed term sentence. That's basically on some sort of a sliding scale.
Right.
Once you're out of prison, now, for example, in my state, our Constitution explicitly states that the only people whose voting rights are abridged are those who are still serving a sentence, even if they're on the street, for a crime related to elections or campaigns. So those people continue to vote. They can't vote until they complete their sentence.
Right.
But as long as you're not in prison, you can vote in South Carolina.
Right.
The thing is, other states like Florida, Texas, Connecticut, New York, and I know Connecticut does have this for sure. Oregon has it, where if you're a convicted felon, once you're out of prison, you're not allowed to vote in most cases, and for life in most cases, unless the governor issues a pardon.
Right.
Or restore, not a full pardon, but maybe just a restoration of rights. Although in this case, I wouldn't consider it a right. I'd say, well, they're just giving you the privilege to vote.
Right. It's very interesting.
Because if the government can take it from you for life, then it's not a right.
Yeah.
Just like the right to own a gun.
Yeah.
If the government said that because you went to prison, but if you've done your time, you completed your sentence, you still can't legally own a gun without going back, being sent back to prison.
Yeah.
Then I guess we don't really have gun rights in this country. We just have a temporary privilege.
Interesting point. Interesting point, which blows up, what is it, Miller? What was the case, the Supreme Court case, that found the individual right to own a gun in the Second Amendment?
It starts with an H. I can't remember. So it wasn't Miller. It was...
Yeah, Heller. That's it. It was Heller.
Heller versus D.C.
Right, Heller versus D.C.
My point is that if Congress has the power to decide that because you can be permanently stripped of a right, just like 13 states, and there's 13 states that have felon voter bans.
Right.
And if you ever need to know that these voter bans are purely for racist reasons, you should look into the history of this.
Oh, yeah.
The very first felon voter ban was in Alabama. It was passed in 1903. And the state senator who passed it made it quite clear that his plan was to try to keep as many, I'll use the word Negroes, from voting.
Yeah.
That was what they thought was a legitimate loophole because, of course, nobody in Congress was going to challenge it because they didn't want to.
Right. In 1903.
The constitutional provisions are already there.
Right. I mean, this was just 5 years after, I want to say Sanford. That was Dred Scott v. Sanford. What was the separate but equal case in 1898?
Was
Plessy versus Ferguson. Thank you very much. Yeah, that was just a few years. So this was just a few years after Plessy. And so, yeah, of course, they're not going to challenge that. Fascinating. CJ, I think you're right. And in fact, we are going to send you a $50 Pro Flowers gift certificate, if you would like. You got a sweetie you want to send some flowers to?
I'll think of something.
Okay, hang on just a minute. It's, Valentine's Day is coming up this Friday. $50 gift, Pro Flowers gift certificate that you can use to give flowers to your special someone thanks to proflowers.com. Danielle's going to pick you up. He's online, too. So, very interesting. Time? 1 minute. Cool. Renee in Bell, Florida. Hey, Renee. You want to talk about voting rights?
Hi, Tom. It's the first time I've ever called you. Your previous caller grabbed my line. I was calling to tell you about the 13th and 15th Amendment.
Uh-huh.
And I'm nowhere near as sophisticated as y'all, where the two of you can cite cases and everything else. I just had a little booklet about the Constitution, and then when I read it, it just seemed plain as day to me that that it was a right. That
it is.
Felon, once he's done... It's not a state's right, it's a constitutional right.
Right, and it's one of the nice things about the Constitution is that it's, by and large, written in simple English. It's not full of whereases and see paragraph 16B and, you know, under such exceptions as the terms of the fine, you know, print and paragraph 5, section 2 of whatever. No, it's just very...
I'm all for a lot of states' rights, except when it comes to human rights.
Yes.
Another thing I have a real problem with is expungement laws from one state to another.
Which is?
For instance, in Ohio, and I just know this because of an ex-husband that got in trouble there and was able to expunge for cheap because he got a drop charge or whatever, or withhold adjudication. And in Ohio, it doesn't matter how many times you get a charge dropped, withhold adjudication, you can have it expunged.
What's it? Oh, you they have the arrest removed from your record. That's expungement. Renee, thank you very much.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the show. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard, count on them to help protect what makes you, you. WIX, Wix.com, everyone deserves to have their own stunning site, and it's free. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. ITM Trading, America's trusted source for rare coins and precious metals. Web.com, you say it, they will build it. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. Boston Beer, America's leading brewer of handcrafted, full-flavored beers. Geico, 15 minutes could save you up to 15%. And EcoWine.com, your trusted source for organic wines since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
Listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you, and Gretchen Blyler on the line with us, a two-time Olympian, silver medalist, five-time X Games medalist, four golds, spokesperson for Protect Our Winters, protectourwinters.org, of course, the website. Gretchen, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Thanks for joining us. Protect Our Winters? Explain.
Protect Our Winters. Well, this is an amazing organization that is basically bringing together the entire winter sports community to affect change and specifically policy around climate change. I've been lucky enough to sit on the board of directors for POW and have gotten to go to Capitol Hill with POW now for two different times, basically to support Obama's climate action plan and support the EPA and regulating our carbon emissions, because this is one of the biggest ways we're going to get things done around here.
Yeah. Now, in business, the first law of modern business, it seems, at least in the United States, is internalize profits, externalize losses or expenses. And these expenses that get dumped on the public, that get dumped on other people, they're referred to in business and in science as externalities. And so the externalities associated with burning fossil fuels are things like the cancers that people get from burning, you know, people burning gasoline and diesel fuel, asthmas, other diseases of that type from downwind from refineries, as well as from you know, highways and cars and trucks. And then the biggest one, the one that you're talking about here, is a global climate change, which is producing superstorms and changing. In fact, this temperature gradient between the mid-latitudes and the Arctic has dropped so much that we no longer have a barrier of air that's keeping the jet stream way up to the north. And so the entire United States is now getting weather that used to be limited to Canada. All of these things are the externalities of burning fossil fuels, and yet the fossil fuel industry not only does not pay a penny for any of this, but we pay for the United States Navy to protect the shipping lanes so that, you know, ExxonMobil and BP and all these other companies can bring fossil fuel products to us from the Middle East. We pay for the cost of dealing with repaired land when it's had, you know, fracking fluids injected into it. We pay for the cleanup from the oil spills. Isn't it time for us collectively to say that the fossil fuel industry is the only industry in America that doesn't pay to take out its trash? I mean, even on the radio show, we have to pay to take out our trash. They don't pay to take out their trash. In fact, we do. Isn't it time for like a carbon tax to say, you know, it wouldn't even be a tax, a fee, you know, that just recovers the cost of these externalities?
Yeah, I mean, it's horrible, and it seems so common sense what we need to do, but it's big money. Mm-hmm. And that's why we, as, you know, the winter sports community, we have a lot of say in this, because not only is climate change affecting, for me, the sport that I love and my livelihood, since I am a professional snowboarder, I need snow to be able to do what I do, but it trickles down into our mountain communities. And the winter sports community, there's 23 million people in this winter sports community, and 212,000 tourist-dependent jobs in these communities. So, you know, everyone talks about, oh, you know, shutting down the carbon emissions for our power plants, is we're going to lose jobs. Well, we're losing jobs all the time in these mountain communities, and that's what we want to talk about.
And that's,
we're seeing it firsthand.
And that's the top of the mountain. I mean, if you go into Bolivia or, you know, any the countries along the Andes, if you go into communities at the foothills of the Himalayas, What you are seeing now is that rivers that used to run really, really heavy are starting to run really, really light. And in some places, you know, the water is drying up. And the consequence of that is that people are not able to grow crops. I mean, we're seeing among some of the very poorest people in the world, some real, real dangerous stuff as a result of the loss of these snowpacks and the melting of the glaciers that historically fed these rivers.
Exactly. It's not just about snow, but when the snow melts, you know, so many people depend on the snow melt for drinking water. And then after a dry winter, you've got drought, you've got forest fires. We're seeing a lot of the pine bark beetle devastation in Colorado. I mean, it's a chain event,
yeah.
A chain reaction.
Porter Fox has a piece in the New York Times February 7th. What would that have been, a few days ago? It titled "The End of Snow." And Porter, I'm assuming this is a he writes, the situation led the climatologist Daniel Scott, a professor of global change and tourism at the University of Waterloo in Ontario, to analyze potential venues for future winter games. And he says he's looking at a 7-degree Fahrenheit increase in global temperatures. It'd be about 4 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. He said out of the 19 cities that have hosted Winter Olympics, as few as 10 might be cold enough by mid-century to host them, and by 2100, it only becomes 6 out of 19 cities. This, you know, you can look at this as a sports disaster, but it's a symptom of a much larger one, is it not?
Yeah, it is. It's shocking to see that and hear that. But for me, as a pro snowboarder, I mean, I'm absolutely seeing it. I'm fortunate to be able to travel around the world year-round chasing snow, and I've been doing that for the past 13 years, and we're seeing changes all over the globe. And, you know, sort of jokingly during the Vancouver Olympics, we said, wow, you know, we're not going to be able to have a Winter Olympics anymore. We're all going to have to just go up to the North Pole. There won't be any options, but it's really looking like a reality. And then you're seeing Sochi, you're seeing all of the news around Sochi with, for example, the half pipe. There's been lots of complaints that the half pipe is just not up to par. And it's a lot because of the temperatures. It didn't help that they chose a subtropic location to host the Winter Olympics. But right now, this day and age with climate change, you definitely don't want to choose a climate like that to host the biggest winter, you know, sporting event, you know, in the world.
Right. But even if you went to the Arctic right now, the Arctic Ocean last summer was losing ice at the rate of an area the size, half the size of the state of Kansas, every single day. It's unprecedented.
It is.
So
it is.
On the other hand, in Antarctica, it has become warm enough that snow is falling more aggressively, and so they're adding snow. Maybe we should move the Olympics to McMurdo Station. It's Patagonia, you know, the southern tip of Chile. It's a tough one. So basically what you're doing is you're bringing together athletes around the world, high-profile people who can wake people up to the fact that global warming is real with ProtectOurWinters.org, your PAWDA organization, which is really great. I mean, using the power of celebrity, using the power of sports to wake up people who might not be paying attention to science. I think it's really important.
Yeah, and, you know, we're not climate scientists. But we're athletes who are seeing it firsthand every single day in what we do. And actually just today, Protect Our Winters, along with 105 Olympians, released a statement calling on world leaders to take action on climate change. And basically prepare a commitment, to work on this. And, it's pretty cool. You can check out this statement on ProtectOurWinters.org. But it's great to see Olympians coming together. It's great to see the winter sports community coming together, because that's what it's going to take. It's going to take all of us coming together to demand change.
Amen. Well done. Gretchen, I salute you. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
And keep up the great competitions. Gretchen Blyler, 2-time Olympian, silver medalist, 5-time X Game medalist, 4 gold, spokesperson for Protect Our Winters. ProtectOurWinters.org is the website. Check it out.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The end of snow. Could it be the end of human life? Could we be looking at a bottleneck event? Do you know what that means? I'll explain in a bit. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Mark watching Free Speech TV. I'm clicking on the wrong side of my mouse here. Mark watching Free Speech TV in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Well, I watch you religiously, and yesterday you were talking about the post office and how that it's against the law for the post office to do anything that's not postal related.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they do have a food drive every year, which is the largest single-day food drive in America, called Stamp Out Hunger.
Right.
And by chance, I started an earlier one called Cans for Carriers Who Care 8 years before, and it morphed into the national. I'm not taking credit for the national, but they still are doing the Cans for Carriers at Christmas time in Eugene.
Well, good for you. Good on you.
Yeah.
So that's something that's not actually funded by the Postal Service and by the federal budget associated with it. That's funded. That's sweat equity. That's you guys doing this as volunteers, right?
Yeah, correct. But there is some overtime involved, but it's pretty negligible. But they do always point to the overtime, the managers do. So there is some hours spent doing non-postal stuff.
You shouldn't have said that on the radio. And Daryl Issa will be calling you to testify before his committee here, Mark.
Oh, darn it. I hope not.
No,
I'm care for that guy.
Yeah, he is a little weird. I mean, the only felon in prison, guy charged with a felony in Congress, at least that I know of. Frankly, though, it wouldn't surprise me if some conservative group is monitoring the show or some Republican is listening that they're going to try and put a stop to this. So let me know if anybody does, would you?
Yeah, well, I really hope they don't.
I hope they don't, too.
We're doing 3 days in Oregon. We do 3 days a year, and we generate, for Lane County, we get about 350,000 pounds of food for the local food bank every year. So it's a good one, win-win situation. We were really super lucky when it started.
Good.
So I'd really hate to see the end of that.
Yeah, me too. Good on you, Mark. Thanks for the call, and thanks for the heads up on that. Great to hear about it. Laura in Thompsonville, Illinois. Hey, Laura, welcome to the program. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a topic that was related to sorted of what you were talking about a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that on Obamacare, there should be mandatory testing for mental illness to keep the guns out of the hands of the mentally ill.
Well, there's a problem. There are different types of mental illness, and some, in fact, probably most, would not predispose someone to either suicide or homicide. And when you start talking about mandatory testing, and then, there's big areas of, questioning what is a mental illness. I mean, 35 years ago, the American Psychiatric Society or Association defined homosexuality as a mental illness. Now they don't. So these things change over time. ADHD is something in great dispute. But I understand your point. And I think that people who have been adjudicated mentally ill, who have been in court and declared mentally ill and violent or with the potential for violence, should not be allowed to have weapons. Or anybody who has been in court and adjudicated violent or potentially violent should not be able to acquire weapons. So I understand your point, Laura, and I'm supportive of it. It's one of those things where, the devil's in the details. How do you play this out? Thank you for the call. And how do you do it using a political mechanism that can be easily turned or exploited or modified if the wrong people get into power? So you got to be very careful with the power of government. 20 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, speaking the truth of multinational corporations would really rather you didn't know all about, like a federal judge blew up net neutrality and the entire American corporate news media did not even talk about it. We did. Right now, we're in the public comment period for the State Department for your comments on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, on the Keystone XL pipeline, and, this is not being reported by the corporate mainstream media. In fact, they seem to be cheerleading for it. Really? The Trans-Pacific Partnership, there's this piece of legislation, the Bipartisan Trade Promotion Act that President Obama mentioned in his last national address, that takes away the constitutional authority of Congress to actually you know, debate and amend a piece of legislation. And instead says the president can dump it in their lap and they have to give it an up or down vote. It's called, it used to be called fast track. Now it's called Bipartisan Trade Promotion Act, which is just weird because how do you call a bill bipartisan when in the House of Representatives, the only guy supporting it is a Republican? They couldn't find one Democrat in the entire House of Representatives who would take enough money from the fossil fuel industry, from the international, you know, the Walmarts of the world and the Apples of the world, the companies that depend on multinational business trade, you know, to sign onto this thing. Not one. Totally weird. Totally weird. Johnny in Lamarck, Texas. Hey, Johnny, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Maybe Mark from the post office should rename their endeavors Freedom for American Families with Hungry Kids. As long as it's got the word freedom and American in there, that'll fool the Republicans. They're so, they don't really like to nuance their thoughts too much.
Well, it does actually raise an important point, which is that you're not free if you're hungry. I mean, this is the point that FDR made. A necessitous man is not a free man. That if you're hungry, if you're unemployed, if you're homeless, if you don't have, you know, if you don't have the basic necessities of life, you are not free. Anyhow, yeah. Back to you.
Are you still there?
Yeah.
So I'd like to also congratulate your caller earlier, Bob, the gentleman hippie who was transporting some pot across state lines, spent 2 or 3 years in Illinois state prison.
Yeah.
I think he's got a great story waiting to turn into a book, and maybe you or someone you know could help him put it on paper.
Hmm.
And he could raise lots of money for liberal causes and at the same time expose the abuse of police and prosecutorial powers, how we violate the Constitution, how we overreach into people's personal property and their possessions via the RICO statute, expose a whole bunch of things while at the same time segueing into our need to go to national health care.
Yeah, yeah. And to end the war on drugs. I mean, yeah, that's my big takeaway is, you know, here's another life shattered by the war on drugs. And I think I've told the story on the air before. When I was 18 or 19 years old, a friend of mine who I knew at that point in time, I hadn't seen him in about a year, but he had been a very, very close friend of mine when I was in junior high school and high school. We used to stay at each other's houses a lot. And, we were like best friends for a year or two back when we were like 13, 14. He got busted with a fair amount of pot. I think it was almost a pound of pot in Lansing, Michigan. And this was the late 60s. And he went to prison for 2 years. And they sent him to a serious prison. And he came back just really, really, really wounded by that. He was just never the same person. And that, it's just, you see that kind of thing. It's like, you know, the waste of the cost to the state to house that person, and then the loss of you know who he was and could have been, and the damage that's done, and the PTSD, and the I mean, I'm sure this has I haven't talked to him since we were 15 years old, so I can't say where he is now or if he's even still alive, but and one of the reasons why I don't want to name him, I don't have his permission. But I saw that up close and personal, and actually I haven't seen him since we were 18 or 19. I saw him briefly after he got out of jail, and it was a different person. I mean, it was just a different person, and it's so sad and it's so wrong. We should not have this war on drugs. It's not a war on drugs. It's a war on people who use drugs. That's what it is. You can't declare a war on an inanimate object. It's like saying I declare a war on stones. Really? How much time do we have, Shane? You've got about a minute and a half. Oh, cool. Let's pick up another call. Larry in Nutley, New Jersey, listening on WBAI. Hey, Larry.
Hey, I just wanted to encourage all your listeners and especially Rutgers alumni to contact the president of Rutgers and tell him not to give Condoleezza Rice an honorary doctorate and $35,000.
Whoa! Rutgers is giving Condi Rice an honorary doctorate in what? Twisting the Constitution into a pretzel?
I'm hoping it's for her piano playing. That's the only thing that I could think of that might be worth
it. She is good at that.
I posted an online letter on your community that was published in Rutgers' daily paper, the Daily Targum, that I sent in. So that link is there with my reasons for opposing Condi Rice being honored. They call her the Honorable Condi Rice, but I said there's nothing honorable about lying to Congress and supporting torture.
Right. When is this supposed to happen at Rutgers?
It's going to be at commencement in May.
In May. So there's still time to petition Rutgers to say no, just say no to Condi.
Yeah, and there's also going to be a few, three other people getting honorary degrees, so I would encourage those three people to say, you know, I don't want to receive an honorary degree that Condi's getting.
Right.
One of them is actually the son of the two Leakeys. He's an anthropologist at Brooklyn College.
Oh,
so, yeah, I can't imagine.
The son of Richard and Mary Leakey?
Yeah, I can't imagine him wanting to be honored at the same time as Condi.
Interesting. Or by this time, he might be even a grandson. Larry, thanks for the heads up. And she's being paid a $35,000 speaking fee on top of this?
Yep. Just look for my link on your...
Over at TomHartman.com in the community. Larry, thank you very much. I will check it out. Wow, I got an honorary degree. I didn't get paid, though. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Chris, my degree was from Goddard College. I think that that was about integrity rather than fame. But in any case, we'll be back. The bad and the very, very fascinantly ugly, brought to you by the organic wine company, EcoWine.com. The good, Chris Cluey. In an interview with the Huffington Post yesterday, the former NFL punter and outspoken LGBT rights advocate called out anonymous NFL executives who said that the league isn't ready for a distraction like openly gay player Michael Sam. He said, "One thing I thought was really interesting was the word distraction. It seems that this word distraction is code for, I really don't like the idea of a gay player on my team, but I know I can't come out and say that, so I'll use the word distraction instead." I couldn't agree more. Well said, Chris. The bad. James Taranto. The Wall Street Journal columnist is being heavily criticized today for a piece he wrote about sexual assault on college campuses. According to Taranto, what is called the, I'm quoting him now, "What is called the problem of sexual assault on campus is in large part a problem of reckless alcohol consumption by men and women alike. When two drunken college students collide, the male one is almost always presumed to be at fault." End of quote. In other words, James Taranto thinks it's time for society to start blaming the victims of sexual assault, as if that doesn't happen already way too much. The Wall Street Journal should be ashamed of itself for publishing this kind of misogynistic nonsense. And the very, very ugly... Gary James. The Oklahoma restaurant owner is embroiled in controversy today over accusations that his business discriminates about, well, pretty much everyone. He didn't do himself any favors with some comments he made about his policies to a local TV station. Check it out.
Gary's Chicaro's, a restaurant and bar in Enid. It's been open for more than four decades and carries quite the reputation.
I've been in business 44 years. I think I can spot a freaker. I really don't want gays around. I don't deal with these people walking down the street with no jobs, welfare. If I reached over there and slapped the out of you, you should be offended. But to say, chink, you know, or somebody called me a bigot, that doesn't bother me. Why should it bother you? I really don't want gays around. Any man that would compromise his body would compromise anything.
That is very, very ugly. That's incredibly ugly. Of course, it's a little town in Oklahoma. I mean, you know, odds are it's going to be really interesting to see what the national spotlight brings to him, whether it turns him into a duck. Do you see this poll, the Phil Robertson from Duck Dynasty? Right now, according to the poll down in Louisiana, he would beat Mary Landrieu, who's running for re-election. You have to say, what's with this? The guy's a multimillionaire. His kids are all college graduated. I mean, one of them used to be a model. I mean, they used to, but then they got this shtick. Oh, let's put American flag bandanas around our head and grow our hair out and talk funny and behave as if we're, you know, from the backwoods bayou. Right. It's very interesting. Okay, Robert, in Bensonville, Illinois, you had some questions about my comments on tax subsidies. Go for
it. Yeah, I had a question. You had reported, you know, the FEMA, we pay in taxes $4 per year on a $50,000 average household income, and that we pay about $23 and some change for unemployment. And you said $4,000 plus we pay for government subsidies, whether that's oil subsidies and agricultural subsidies like that. Where does food stamps play a role in what we pay in taxes?
Food stamps is about $30. It's $30 to $35 a year per person for a $50,000 a year wage earner.
And that is paid into by all of us as Americans for everyone?
Yeah, yeah. Hang on just a second. I'm looking for the piece of paper here. I know I've got it in front of me, and I can give you the exact
numbers. Yeah, I wish I could just see where you were looking at on the Internet to show and have some actual real paper to show people the numbers and where to locate it at.
Yeah, I actually, if you subscribe to our newsletter over at tomhartman.com, it is free. The link will be in there. And you can probably find it on our website right now since we talked about it yesterday. I'm guessing that Sue has it up by now. And I've got so many papers all over my desk. Oh, here it is right here. Hang on just a minute.
It was just amazing.
Yeah, I am looking at whitehouse.gov/2012-tax receipt. Okay, that's the URL. 2012-TAXRECIEPT, all lowercase. And they break it out. If you are a family of three, married couple with a child, and you are taking the childhood exemption, your 2012 payments, $2,100 in Social Security, $725 in Medicare, and then your income tax of $1,889, and then they break that out, $465 for national defense, $424 for health care, which is $178 for the Medicaid Children's and Health Insurance Program, $185 for Medicare, $26 for health research, $16 for disease control centers, you know, the CDC basically, $17 for COBRA and other health care activities, $18.70 for unemployment insurance, food and nutrition assistance, that would be food stamps, $73.48. I'm sorry, I gave you the wrong number.
No problem.
So you're paying $73. Housing assistance, $32. Earned income, making work pay, and child tax credits, of which this theoretical family is taking because they're claiming a child. That's $53 a year. Supplemental security income, $32. Federal military, this is disability and retirement for the military, $84. Child care and adoption support, this is helping poor people with child care and adoptions, $10. TANF, that's the temporary assistance for needy families. This is when people are just flat out, you know, crashed down on their luck. That's $11 a year. Railroad retirement, $8 a year. And then education and job training. I mean, they break the whole thing out. I can, you know, the veterans benefits, it's all right there. NASA, you're paying $11 a year for NASA. You're spending $38 to enforce the immigration laws. Anyhow, I'm sorry. Oh, you're spending $8 a year for
NASA
FEMA?
That's what they cost. Yeah, cut the funding to NASA, but we're still paying for it, though. So.
Yeah, but, you know, we may be paying a lot less than we were. I don't know. You know, NASA's still doing a lot of stuff. NASA's got a bunch of satellites up there. NASA is, you know, I mean, they help put up the spy satellites and things. You know, they help out with the military. So, you know.
I was watching something about it that we have some 36-odd satellites that will be coming down to about 11 by the end of the decade.
Yeah, plus NASA's, you know, I mean, NASA's got the deep space stuff going on. They got the Mars stuff going on. I mean, they're still doing some cool stuff. But the net of all this, Robert, is that...
I wanted to ask you, where could you post also the link of the galaxy and how the galaxy is of the cerebral cortex? You were talking about that a couple of
times. Here, I'll tell you how to find it.
For it.
I'll tell you how to find it. It's really simple. If you go to YouTube.com, and the YouTube has its own search engine, and just type in large structures of the universe, or large scale structures of the universe, and it'll pop up as the first one or two responses. Say that again?
All right. I will definitely look for that up because I was looking for it, and I've seen a couple, but I don't think they were the exact.
And then if you want to compare that with brains and neurons, you could just look for, you plug into that search engine, microscopic brain structures or brain structures. Robert, Shano tells me that he wants you to get the $50 Pro Flowers gift certificate. You want to give some flowers to somebody for Valentine's Day?
Oh, definitely. Wow.
Okay,
thank
cool.
you. Yeah.
Hang on just a second. Let me put you on hold so that Danielle can get your information. He's on line four, Danielle. We're going to send you a $50 ProFlowers gift certificate. You can use those. You can use to give flowers to your special someone with thanks to ProFlowers.com. It is, after all, the week of Valentine's Day. And it looks like Thursday is going to be insane here. Just plain old flat out nuts. They're talking about 7 to 14 inches of snow. So, we're looking around to see what's going to happen here. I was going to go back to my 50 things, but I've got all these cool calls. Randall in Oceanside, California. Hey, Randall, what's up?
Hey, how you doing today, Tom?
I am very well, thank you, and I hope you are too.
Anyway, I was kind of curious. One thing real quick is they always call these people job creators. And considering like Walmart, basically streamlines everything, wouldn't they be more of job destroyers because they suck the money out of the community and they basically do more using less people for less pay? So the money gets taken out of the community rather than staying in the community.
Yeah, most of your millionaires and billionaires got that way by virtue of their association with multinational corporations. And over the last 10 years, multinational corporations have made over 3 million jobs outside the United States and have eliminated over 2.5 million jobs inside the United States. So I guess net, they are job creators if you're looking at it from the point of view of India or China or Vietnam. But, why we would call them job creators makes no sense to me. It's the people who spend 100% of their paycheck every week, every month. They're the true job creators in the United States because they're the ones that create demand in the economy. They're the ones who cause shop owners to have to buy new inventory, and that new inventory has to be manufactured by somebody. And especially if it's manufactured in the United States, we need to change our trade policies. Especially if it's manufactured in the United States, that means more jobs. Randall, thank you for the call. You are so spot on. We will be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour. Ellen Ratner will be with us in about 5 minutes.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And we'll be back. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service will be with us shortly. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Jerome in Grand Rapids, Michigan, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. Hey, Jerome. What's up?
Oh, thanks for listening to me, Tom.
Sure.
I was wondering about the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act of 1970.
I don't know about
that. A number
of
years back. I can't tell you how I got entangled with it because I'm a little bit under court censorship.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not allowed to complain, but it boiled down to a checked with several civil rights commissions. Oh, it was probably about 20 years ago, and they basically explained to me that I was informed that I was not allowed to use an attorney when dealing with a certain corporation by my employer,
uh-huh.
And it wasn't them. And then I started stumbling into some other things with it. When I went down, I thought, well, maybe it was just a local civil rights commission.
Mm-hmm.
Being a little bit, I was disenfranchised at the moment and not sure just how much graft or whatever.
Jerome, but if I could ask you,
three others and
what's the point that you're trying to make?
Why is it no one ever speaks about the fact that we have no civil rights while we are employed?
While you are unemployed.
While you are employed.
Oh, you know, that that employers are basically kings in a kingdom, that you don't, relative to the workplace, you don't have First Amendment rights, you don't have Fourth Amendment rights, you have no rights. You're absolutely right. And this is why we have unions. I mean, unions are there to balance the power of capital, of employers.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which goes to quarter year. Like 10-year is 10 years.
Yeah.
0 year for congressmen and senators.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
You work for 90 days and you're in the union.
Yeah. No, Jerome, I think you're making, thank you for the call. You're making a great case for unions in the workplace. Sebring in Alamosa, California, or Colorado, excuse me. Hey, Sebring, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Yeah. I've been trying to call you for about 3 years.
Well,
what I wanted to talk to you about is this term they call the religious right. You remember back during, well, I don't know if you remember it, but I do. Back during the Jim Crow era, when the KKK almost controlled the government, they're back, and they're called the religious right, and that Tea Party is this White Citizens Council. And, you know, they've never gone away.
Yeah.
And this is why Obama has had so much opposition. I know a better way to answer the problem of Obama. There's a lot of things about him I don't agree with. And I never, I didn't vote for him, really. But the way they're going about it is the same way that the KKK went against civil rights.
Right.
And everybody's talking, they throw this term around, you know, the religious right and Rush Limbaugh and all of these guys. And actually, this is the same people that were in the KKK back during Jim Crow.
Or the same type of people. I don't think Limbaugh was in the KKK ever, but... And I'm sure he would disavow it. But I get your point, Sebring, and I think it's a thoughtful, it's a nuanced. We'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Ellen Ratner, the Talk Radio News Service, up next. 10 minutes before the hour, taking back our mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Harbin here with you and in the studio with me. And it is so nice. It's always so nice to have you in
it's
the studio,
nice
Ellen Ratner.
It's always nice to be here.
Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can give a gift of a goat to a returning slave, literally a freed slave in South Sudan. And so what's in the news, Ellen?
Oh, my gosh. Well, first of all, the debt limit. Speaker Boehner said today that they are going to vote on the debt limit, and they are going to most likely pass it as a clean debt limit. Actually, I was on the train yesterday with two Republican members of Congress, just ran into them, and they said the debt limit was going to pass. So my guess is the fix is in, so to speak.
Well, the fix is in as much as, I mean, the New York Times piece that I read said that Boehner said that he was going to basically let the Democrats do the heavy lifting on this, and he would
well,
supply.
Well, they need what 18, 20 votes.
He would supply
nothing.
Enough Republican votes
right.
to pass.
Exactly.
So,
that's all they need.
Right. So just the fact that he's bringing this to the floor is a violation of the Boehner version of the Hastert rule.
Right.
Yeah, and the Tea Party guys are going nuts.
They're going totally nuts on him.
Yeah.
But he knows he had to do it. He became a decent American for a second.
Very impressive. You know.
Okay. Janet Yellen, she is head of the Fed, as you know. She testified today, was her first testimony before the House Financial Services Committee. She said the economic recovery was not going as well, particularly the jobs report that happened in December. She said real gross GDP is estimated to have risen at an annual rate of 3.5% in the third and fourth quarters. But she said that if the incoming market continues to improve, that they are going to take measured steps at future meetings in terms of asset purchases. As you know, they were buying a large amount of bonds every month.
It was $85 billion. Now it's down to $60 billion.
Right.
Like
and
that.
She says that they are going to take measured steps to do that. And she said that
measured steps downward?
Downward.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
that they are going to take a look at the outlook for the labor market, inflation, and efficiency and costs of the purchases that they were making as the Fed.
Now, she mentioned the labor market. The charter for the Fed back in 1913, the charter says that the Fed has two jobs, to maintain low levels of unemployment and low levels of inflation. During the Greenspan years, he ignored the unemployment part.
He certainly did, and she's very insistent on that.
Okay. Now, you know, Ben Bernanke was kind of ambivalent about it. I mean, he would mention
she has a record of being very strong on that particular issue.
So if the Republicans won't do it, the Fed will.
She's going to find a way.
That's going to be very interesting because, you know, you've got basically 2 years of the Obama presidency left, and the Republicans are really, really, really trying to make his legacy be worst economy ever. You know, shouldn't let that black guy in the White House or whatever.
Right, right, right. Well, that, really, I mean, unemployment has gone down. We are still haven't reached the pre-2008 levels of employment, but we're getting there slowly.
Right, right. Well, but slowly. You know, to some extent, the unemployment is going down because people are just throwing up their hands and walking
away.
Well,
sometimes people are, and that's exactly why it is still not at pre-2008 levels.
Right, right.
I mean, technically, it sort of is, but it isn't.
You know, Reagan, at this point in his presidency, 5 years into his presidency, Reagan had added over 1 million federal workers. Obama has seen 700,000 leave. That's almost a 2 million
net. Because the
net.
Republicans will not approve of a budget that it puts any more federal workers on.
That's right. Reagan had increased the federal workforce by 3.8% at this point in his presidency, by 9% overall during his 8 years. And Obama has seen it actually decline.
Well, my friend Grover Norquist is right. We ought to support Ronald Reagan.
Yes, there you go. Do what Reagan did. It's just that Reagan had a Congress that was willing to go along with him. Anyway, back to you, Ellen.
Okay. France. Yesterday there was an agreement signed between NASA and the French. The French are going to help us get to Mars.
Wow, but you know what everybody really wants to know.
Yes, they want to know about Holland's girlfriend.
That's right. And who's going to be sitting next to him at the state dinner tonight?
Exactly. Yes. Well, actually, what's interesting is the way state dinners are done is they always split up the first lady and the president.
Really?
Yes. And they're never
Louise,
at the same table.
Louise would have hated that. She.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Actually, I was invited to one. It was not technically a state dinner, but it was because the prime minister of Israel is not the head of state. The president is.
Right.
But I was invited to that dinner, and they split me and my partner up.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's always done at state dinners. So it's not who's sitting next to you. Okay.
But he's got nobody at all with him right now.
No. He's a lone ranger, my friend.
Okay.
Unless, of course, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Today, also at the press conference the president did, the economic sanctions against the government of Iran, the White House said that they're continued to be enforced while negotiators work out a long-term deal. The French were asked, well, what about those 100 businessmen that went to Tehran last week? And the French president said, I cannot stop somebody from traveling, but I warned them that they could not sign any agreements.
Very interesting. But they're getting what's happening is business people, I mean, you know, money is like water, you know, it flows downhill. I mean, it goes to where it's possible to go. And so, you know, if there's going to be a rapprochement, if there's going to be an opportunity, people are jockeying for position to be there when it happens.
Right. The president, by the way, said that they're not considering sending military people to the Assad regime. However, he said the government was falling apart there. Mm-hmm. I don't think you need to be president of the United States to figure that one out.
Right.
And clearly, the French, they said, are working with them, whatever that means. So that's on that front.
The most underreported part of that whole Middle Eastern story is how global climate change and the spike in the price of wheat has driven so many of these revolts.
Well, it is interesting that the French president did mention global climate change in his overall remarks, but it was a quick sort of global climate change. On to the next sentence.
Right.
Okay. Treasury Justice Department Justice Department holder said at a conference today at Georgetown University that he believes that former felons should be allowed to vote. He pointed out that this was a law from the 1800s when they tried to exclude blacks that because of the prison issue, etc. And so he came out very strongly. Of course, he's not going to have a whole lot of influence. A, he's leaving, and two, it's a state issue in terms of who votes. Now, in the great state of Ohio, for instance, Bob Nate is allowed to vote.
That's great, because he's paid his debt to society.
That's right.
And if you read his book, you get it that really John Boehner is probably the guy who should have gone to prison. But let's not go there. Anyhow, in fact, his book is called Sideswiped, and it's brilliant. And your most recent book is called.
Don't even ask.
I just scared you.
Moment.
Scared it right
That's
out
right.
of you. Okay, Ellen Ratner, goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the show. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard, count on them to help protect what makes you, you. WIX, Wix.com, everyone deserves to have their own stunning site, and it's free. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. ITM Trading, America's trusted source for rare coins and precious metals. Web.com, you say it, they will build it. Granger, for the ones who get it done. Boston Beer, America's leading brewer of handcrafted, full-flavored beers. Geico, 15 minutes could save you up to 15%. And EcoWine.com, your trusted source for organic wines since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a quick heads up on our newscast. We have been quoting Congressman Ted Poe, a Republican of Tennessee, citing Congressman Ted Poe. And I'm not sure if he's actually a Republican from Tennessee, but he is a congressman, as saying that Republicans should basically, you know, stop saying stupid things and just, you know, keep their heads down when they're running for office. And it was the last story in our newscast. And, you know, I make jokes about the White House listening to the program. Well, his office was listening to the program, and they called up and said, sorry, it wasn't him. It's actually Congressman Phil Rowe, who's the Republican from Tennessee's 1st District. So we are changing our newscast on YouTube. You will see that story deleted from there. And I just wanted to correct it. I mean, we don't have any... There's not some kind of legal obligation because we didn't do it maliciously, that sort of thing. But I do want you to know, as well as Congressman Poe's office, that we really try to be, if we say something, we want to back it up and we want to know that it's true. And apparently we got that story wrong. We were quoting a Raw Story, which is still up over at Raw Story, but we believed them to be factual, and apparently, according to the congressman's office anyway, and I'll take their word for it for the moment. The story is not factual. So so I just corrected that. Caitlin Swain is with us. She is an attorney with the Advancement Project, advancementproject.org. And what would have happened if the Tea Party last Saturday had 80,000 people show up to protest, Jerry Brown's raising taxes in California, and they had shown up in Fresno or something. Every news agency in the country would have had a truck there. There would have been reporters standing in line. They would have been beating each other with microphones over the head, you know, to get out of my way. I want to get in front of that camera. So we talked some yesterday about what happened in North Carolina. But Caitlin, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Tell us let's reboot this story here. What happened on Saturday that the American corporate media virtually completely ignored?
Well, Tom, I think that, you know, you've hit the nail on the head that this was a truly historic event this weekend. Over 80,000 folks came out in North Carolina to stand up against the avalanche of harmful legislation that came through in 2013, the session, and to lift up a new agenda for the state of North Carolina, putting forward, you know, a people's agenda for the state. And I think what's most exciting, you know, for those of us who've been working with the North Carolina NAACP, you know, that's really been leading this moral movement in North Carolina, was to see the diversity of folks who came out, people from the civil rights community, faith-based community, labor, students, women's rights, environmental activists, LGBTQ rights, and immigrant justice communities were all standing up together with one voice saying, you know, enough is enough in North Carolina. We can do better.
Well, isn't that in part because ever since this multimillionaire, his name is Poe too, isn't it?
Pope.
Yeah, that's right. Art Pope. Thank you. You know, having just done an errata on this news story, I've got this name stuck in my head. Yeah, Art Pope, who, you know, basically funded the Republican Party's rise to power and the gerrymandering and all this other stuff that happened in North Carolina in 2010. And now the governor has made him the budget director. So this multimillionaire gets to oversee a cut in his own taxes and a raising of the taxes on working people. That you, all those areas that you listed, from the environment to LGBTQ rights to labor to education, that the Republicans have been taking a meat axe to all of these things. And the only folks that they've been, you know, giving props to helping out are rich folks like Art Pope.
It has really, you know, I think that is exactly right. It has really been an avalanche of legislation, you know, that folks in North Carolina are just feel like is totally out of touch, you know, with North Carolina's history. You know, we've seen them denying emergency employment benefits, expanding, you know, refusing to expand Medicaid. They're cutting funding for public education. They repealed the Racial Justice Act in North Carolina. And, you know, one of the things, you know, that we're working most closely with North Carolina NAACP on is fighting back against this monster voter suppression law that got passed this session. That's really the worst that we've seen in the country in recent history.
And what, give me some examples.
Yeah, so, I mean, this law is, it's really amazing. It has gone after just about every way that people vote, you know, who can vote, where they can vote, when they can vote, and how they can vote. You know, it's it goes after same-day registration. It cuts back early voting opportunities for folks across the state. It prohibits college IDs and local government IDs for being used for voting, and it implements this very strict voter ID requirement, one of the strictest in the country. So, you know, we're challenging that law right now, Tom, in federal court on behalf of the North Carolina NAACP. And, you know, I think the people of North Carolina really made their voices heard this last weekend that, you know, trying to suppress the vote is not going to work in North Carolina.
Yeah. Do you think so? I mean, is it possible that we, I mean, this was the largest, arguably, civil rights march in a southern state since the 1960s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yet it got no coverage. And at least outside the state, I don't know. I have no idea what the in-state media did with this. But is it not inconceivable that in this post-Citizens United era, where the Supreme Court has discovered that money is protected by the First Amendment and that corporations are protected by the 14th Amendment, that that corporate money that Art Pope has and that, you know, and all the other outside billionaires who have been contributing and millionaires, multimillionaires who have been contributing to the Republicans in North Carolina, I mean, they're shutting down voting, you know, places in student areas and minority areas. They're just blatantly going about this. I mean, is there a chance that they'll get away with this on and on? I mean, they already have to a large extent, that they'll just be able to continue steamrolling along?
I have to say, I think that there's no chance.
Really?
And I think part of that is because of the good work of folks like you and helping to get the word out about what's happening. But more importantly is the work that's happening on the ground in North Carolina. We're seeing, you know, this 80,000 people didn't show up out of thin air. You know, they
right.
have been mobilizing across that state in ways that we, you know, I haven't seen in recent history. And what you're seeing now is this group that turned out this weekend, you know, and to stand with North Carolina NAACP and the rest of the coalition, they are fired up, and they have really made a commitment to focusing on a grassroots mobilization plan this summer to take back that state and make it clear that North Carolina is not for sale.
Right. Well, that's marvelous, and I'm really glad to hear your level of enthusiasm, because I know it's so easy to look at these situations and these enormous piles of money and the gerrymandering that's been done that can't be undone until 2020. And so now it takes three voters to elect a Democrat to the one voter to elect a Republican in the state of North Carolina. And, you know, which is just unheard of. I mean, it should be 1-to-1. It's so easy to look at this and go, oh no. But, you know, you're right. People have to, we still have a ways to go. So get over to advancementproject.org and check out how you can participate and how you can become part of the solution in North Carolina. Caitlin Swain, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. Have a great one.
Thanks. You too. Good talking with you. This is our work. You know, this is really important stuff.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And I think even more important is spreading the word. I mean, ask your friends, hey, did you hear that the largest civil rights movement marched since the 60s just happened last weekend? And 16 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It is 16 minutes past the hour, right, Shano? Okay, you betcha. Let's see here. David in Newport Beach, California. Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom. Well, my first reason for calling in was to let you know I listened to your commercial, and it was talking about if you listen on the computer to call in and let you know that we're listening. And I just wanted to let you know that
thank you.
I've been listening for many years, and I'm a really big fan.
Thank you.
And I also wanted to express appreciation for your logo. As an old toolmaker, I appreciate that tribute to your father very much, and I just wanted to acknowledge you for that. I think it's a cool logo, and every time I see it, I don't see it too much now that I don't have, you know, I live in Southern California, so we don't have access to progressive radio anymore except on the computer.
Well, in Los Angeles, KPFK is carrying our show, and we're live right
now. They are carrying
our
show?
As we speak,
we
are live on KPFK, so you can just tune it in on your FM dial.
Great. Yep. Good. I will do that. Absolutely. Yep.
Every afternoon at 2 o'clock Pacific time.
Yeah, I listen to you from 12 until 3 on on the computer. So, but and additionally, I have this ongoing argument that I get into on the computer, with or you know on Facebook with some of the people over the source of wealth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my argument is quite simple. It's labor creates all wealth. Period.
Well, this was, you know, I mean, if you read Wealth of Nations, this was the basic assertion of Adam Smith of where the wealth of nations comes from. You start out with natural resources, and some nations have different or more or less natural resources than others, but everybody has something. And you know, one of the examples he used in Wealth of Nations was a tree limb laying on the ground. It has no intrinsic value, but if you apply human labor to it and carve it into the shape of an axe handle, you now have something that is a thing of value that can be sold for a specific amount of money or traded for a specific amount of bread or food or, you know, whatever. And not only value in the immediate moment, but because it will last multiple generations, it becomes part not only of the wealth of the person who created it, but also of the wealth of the nation in which that person lives, thus the title Wealth of Nations.
Exactly. You know, and that's the point that I argue. And it's surprising to me that people that claim to be educated can't see that. They can't. In fact, they can't even see the worth of their own labors when they're working.
Right.
You know, we all contribute by our labor.
Yeah.
Those that profit from that labor are profiting from the labor, the efforts of others. They're not contributing to that labor. They're just clipping coupons, so to speak.
Yeah. Every salesperson in America knows the old line that nothing happens until somebody sells something. But it's even larger than that. No wealth is created until real wealth is created until somebody makes something. And that's why having America go from having 35% of our GDP being manufacturing when Reagan came into office to around between 14 and 15%, I believe it is now, is such a disaster because our wealth is hemorrhaging. And you see this in our trade deficit. So excellent point, David. And labor creates all wealth. Spot on. Thank you very much for the call. Be sure to check us out on KPFK. And we'll be right back 20 minutes past the hour. The Hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. You know, we recapped in earlier hours, we recapped where those statistics came from and exactly what those numbers were of, you know, why it is that you're spending about $28, I think it is, a year. If you earn $50,000 a year, you're spending around 28 bucks for long-term unemployment or for all unemployment insurance. But you're spending between $4,000 and $6,000 a year in both direct and indirect taxes, both federal taxes, state taxes, local taxes, and your tax obligations incurred in your name by the country in the form of the deficit for the subsidies of large corporations, particularly oil corporations and high-tech corporations and retail corporations like Walmart and McDonald's and the fast food operations and like this. You're spending between $4,000 and $6,000 a year. And this from the Bitchy Pundit website, you know, that has gone viral around Facebook and the web, but it's just great stats that you can find. And so we started out with that. We had a debate with Horace Cooper about whether or not ex-felons, after they have paid their debt to society, should be allowed to vote. I'm saying absolutely yes, and he's saying, hey, it's up to the state, which legally or technically is right, but is, in my opinion, morally wrong and not good for democracy. The breaking news, there's a massive snowstorm. The Washington Post now is saying that this could be like the snowstorm of 1987, as I recall. I'd have to go back to the Washington Post story, but anyhow, they have to go back to the 80s to find one this big that's about to whack Washington, D.C. and areas north. And 7 to 14 inches of snow day after tomorrow. And it's going to start falling tomorrow. And so John Boehner is going to hold a vote tonight. In fact, I don't think it's already happened. We haven't seen the chyron, but it's happening right now, Shano says. Shano's got the TV out there. And, you know, he's going to let the Democrats basically pass a clean bill to raise the debt ceiling until after the midterm elections, which has the Tea Party just in knots. They're just having a hysterical hissy fit. Janet Yellen testified before Congress today and raised the point that really hasn't been raised since before the Greenspan Fed chairmanship, that when the Fed was chartered in 1913, it was given two jobs. One was to maintain low inflation, which everybody's always focused on, but the other was to maintain low unemployment. And Greenspan actually kind of spit in the face of that. In my book, Screwed, I quote Greenspan, Alan Greenspan from the Wall Street Journal, where he said that he saw his principal job as chairman of the Fed, that whenever the economy really started rolling along to raise interest rates and thus slow down the economy, because he said that, and this is a paraphrase from memory, but it's probably pretty close to the exact original quote. I've said it enough times. I think I've got it memorized, but I may be off by a few words. He said that one of the most important parts of his job was to maintain a certain minimum necessary level of worker insecurity in order to prevent what he referred to as wage inflation, which, you know, is like, you know, workers making more money, right? And bad stuff. You can push the button right up in the top right-hand corner there, too. Physically push it. So, anyhow, we're trying to find out what's going on with this vote in the House of Representatives and entertaining times here at the studio. But it looks like John Boehner is losing or is going to give it up. He's going to do the right thing. So that's very interesting. Michael in Clayton, North Carolina. I asked the question. Here's the largest civil rights march since the 60s. Solidly at least 80,000 people showing up in Raleigh, North Carolina, as I recall, to protest the Governor McCrory and Art Pope and all the Republicans, all these horrible things that they're doing, suppressing voter rights, et cetera, raising taxes on working people, cutting taxes on millionaires and multimillionaires like Art Pope. And it got virtually no national press coverage. And I asked the question semi-rhetorically. I assumed it was covered well in North Carolina. I wonder how it was covered in state. Michael, you're in North Carolina. You are watching the media. What happened?
Quite honestly, Tom, it was hardly covered at all, even locally. I live 15 miles from Raleigh. I was out of town in Charlotte on Saturday. But I've searched the web for hours today to try to find newspapers, articles, videos, TV reports. Found one, and I posted it on Facebook. And it was very short, and basically it was saying several thousand people showed up. That was
wow.
The statement.
So much for the liberal media, huh?
And, well, it's running, controlled by a corporation.
Yeah.
And then I looked and found it on AP, a long story, in-depth, accurate, but nobody picked it up nationally or even locally.
Mm-hmm.
So what people are angry about in this state is very easy to understand. We have prided ourselves in being a progressive state of the South.
Mm-hmm.
And we have become, since 2010, we took a hard right away from everything this state stood for.
Right.
And people here are angry and upset about what's going on. We've got a governor who, when he was campaigning, said all the right things. And as soon as he got in office, he put Mr. Pope basically in charge, who is a multimillionaire that is running all this from Variety Wholesalers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what we can do. Now, our
there's an election coming up in
right,
7-8 months.
We only have one Democratic representative, which is in my district.
Wow.
And he barely won. I did everything I could to support, and I went to all the voting stations. But he is not doing what he should be doing, and I've been telling him that too. But the problem as I see it, and I think it's a subject for a show.
Real quick, Mark.
Is the First Amendment right?
Hold on.
Freedom of
You're
press.
Listening
Hold
to
on,
the
sir.
Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Okay, the problem is the First Amendment rights.
The First Amendment right, the right to freedom of the press.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, we need to. The modern conservative, John Kenneth Galbraith, said, the modern conservative is engaged in one of man's oldest exercises in moral philosophy, that is, the search for a superior moral justification for selfishness. Isn't that I have that quote on my wall. It's so brilliant. Similarly, Nelson Mandela on poverty. Overcoming poverty is not a task of charity. It's an act of justice. Like slavery and apartheid, poverty is not natural. It is man-made and can be overcome and eradicated by the actions of human beings. While poverty persists, there is no true freedom. And you got 40 million Americans who are so poor they have to turn to food stamps? Say what? Okay. So it's really quite remarkable. Mr. Kim in New Rochelle, New York, listening on WBAI. How are you today?
Yes, good afternoon. Your mentioning of Greenspan was kind of a good segue into what I want to talk about. He said something about keeping labor off balance, or what was the exact kind of...
His concern was what he referred to as wage... His concern was what he referred to as wage inflation. He didn't care about the top end of the pay scale. You know, the CEO is making 500 times more rather than 30 times more just 30 years earlier. But he was worried about average working people having their wages go up. And so he said that the job of the chairman of the Fed, the most important part of his job was maintaining, this is the quote, maintaining a certain minimum necessary level of worker insecurity. So whenever the job market started to tighten up and thus increasing wages because employers were having to compete for workers, whenever the job market would start tightening up because the economy was doing well, he would raise the interest rates, which would slow down the economy, which would cause companies to lay off people, which would raise unemployment, which would lower wages.
Right. Okay. So that's exactly my point.
The problem is he's really taking his orders from the administration in power. And usually they like they had McChesney Martin in the 60s, and I think he was a Democrat this time, and they wanted Felix Rohatyn, I remember, in the early part of the 90s, but the Republicans said they wouldn't confirm him. So they ended up with Greenspan. But
yeah, well, Greenspan was appointed during the 80s. Wasn't he appointed by Reagan in the 80s?
I'm sure he was, yeah. But he was reappointed then by Clinton.
Right.
Who is a Southern Bubba and a conservative
right.
and always does the wrong thing.
Well, not always, but often.
So they put Greenspan back in yeah. in the 90s. But they know they have to do more or less what they're told, and we got a typical recovery in the 90s. Unemployment went from around 8% under the old Bush down to about 4%, a little lower maybe, before Reagan. The younger Bush got his hands on Greenspan again.
Right, but you know, but keep in mind, during the election of 1980, one of the reasons why everybody was so confident that Jimmy Carter was going to win, and really the only reason he lost is because Reagan's campaign cut a deal with the Iranians to hold the hostages, you know, past the election. That's what killed Carter, and then Carter played right into it by every day having basically a vigil and having Americans pray and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But on the day of the election and for the year leading up to the election, unemployment was under 4%. I think it was 3.6 or 3.8% when, you know, on the day of the election. So the economy was doing fine. Inflation was fairly high, but that was, you know, we were wringing out of the economy the inflation that was the result of the oil shocks of the Arab oil, you know, embargoes. And combined with having to pay off the Vietnam War, which LBJ and Nixon never put on the books.
Right. Okay. But you know, you're about two topics off what I'm trying to focus
okay.
on.
Okay. So let's go back to the original.
First of all, I think we did have a lot of inflation, and they did tighten up. Volcker told them to do that. And I think unemployment was much higher than that. It was around 6%. It was unacceptable, especially for Democrats. Anyway, we have these regular cycles. When Republicans come in, we get a depression. When Democrats come in, we get recovery. There's never been an exception to that. And I don't see why Democrats don't use this as a campaign tool, because every time they come in, like, let's say, this last depression, these are not recessions, these are mild depressions,
right.
Unemployment went from something like a little under 4 to the first Bush recession was around 8, and this and then the catastrophe we had here went up to, I don't know what, 12% probably altogether. So they're throwing people out of work. They destroyed 10 million jobs with this last depression.
Right.
When unemployment goes from 4% to 12, that's 10%. And I think the workforce is around 120 million. So you just do the math.
Right.
They want labor out of business. They want not just insecure, they want economically weak. So they can't strike and they can't argue with the employer, and they have to accept the terms when unemployment's high.
That's absolutely right, and people have to realize.
I don't know why this kind of a conspiracy doesn't get hit more often.
Yeah, I agree with you, and people have to realize that this isn't because Republicans hate workers. It's because they want to dance to the tune of the very wealthy and the corporations, and you know who hate workers, and so it's a bit, well, you know, maybe they hate workers too in and of itself, but I think it's more of, you know, okay, and some of them have actually bought into this ideology that, you know, what's good for GM is good for America. What's good for the big corporations is ultimately going to be good for us. We have to go through a little pain to get there. And what they don't realize, and you're absolutely right, if they just looked at the cycles of American history, they would see that every time the Republicans take control, they squeeze things down to the point where the very rich get very, very rich and average workers get screwed. And we have a mini depression or a severe recession. You're absolutely right. And I share your astonishment that the Democrats have not made this an article of faith and have not promoted it to the point where everybody can recite it just like they can recite that, you know, Reagan said, tear down this wall, Mr. Gorbachev. I mean, it should be that obvious and that well said. Thank you very much. And thanks for listening to WBAI. Conrad in Ramona, California. Hey, Conrad, we need to change the word redistribution.
Yes, because if you caught Paul Krugman on Colbert, oh, about a week and a half ago, Colbert, playing the right-wing pundit, tried to trap Krugman into saying redistribution. And you could see the embarrassment on his face. And this is the thing. We do not need to be embarrassed about this, but we need to replace the word redistribution with the truth, the truthful term, which is reattribution. These factories, none of them
run except for the workers. Your previous caller summed it up so well. All wealth comes from labor.
Yeah.
So if everyone was getting a fair share, an equal share of the profits made from any corporation or any business, we'd have a cooperative. And so what's happening is we've allowed basically the bosses to create a mythology, just like the priests did in the medieval time. Oh, you have to obey the king or you're disobeying God.
Yeah, well, here's another way to blow that up and maintain the word, Conrad. And I don't disagree with you that we could use a new word, but we're kind of stuck with this old one. The way that you blew up the you have to obey the king because, he's ordained by God. Or for that matter, the Pope, Martin Luther blew that up by saying, hey, wait a minute, maybe that papacy is illegitimate. Maybe that king really isn't the smartest guy and the most blessed guy around. Maybe he just happens to be the son of somebody who was a good warlord or something. And I think that it's okay to say I'm all in favor. If somebody has acquired massive wealth by gaming the system, by using tools that aren't available to the average person, for example, buying members of Congress who will then pass tax code that helps that person become insanely wealthy, then I have no problem with saying some of that wealth should be redistributed to people who didn't have access to those tools and who don't have the ability to game the system. That they should not be left out in the cold too.
Ideally, that we could do that. I come from a pretty conservative family. I cannot tell you the stigma that is attached to redistribution.
I know it well. I've probably heard it 5,000 times from my father. Back when he was still alive. My father, the Republican, who died a Republican. But I'm willing to say I'm in favor of redistribution. I think that a lot of the wealth at the top was ill-gotten gains. Or inappropriately gotten gains, or should not have been as large as it was. And a lot of the poverty at the bottom is inappropriate poverty, too. People worked their butts off. Somebody works a 40-hour week or more, they should be able to have a decent life in this country. This is the richest nation on earth. It's insane that we don't. And so, yes, if it takes a certain amount of redistribution of the wealth to make that happen, I'm all in favor of it.
Well, this touches on a
and Krugman should have said
larger
that
larger issue. The larger issue is that progressives now have no discipline when it comes to messaging, and of course, Republicans are king at this right now.
Oh yeah, well,
we seem to have had it during the 1890s to 1914. I'm assuming there was a reaction to the communist revolution in Russia, so no one wanted to use progressive terms anymore, and they from that point on that we've become embarrassed. To mention certain terms, but I think, if we can, I don't know. I hate to bring him up, Karl Rove, but he excels at creating new memes.
Yeah.
And
Frank Luntz actually probably helped him out with most of them.
Right.
But yeah,
we need to create new memes, and then we have to have discipline and stick to them.
I agree. And it ain't going to happen because Democrats. I mean, one of the things about being a Democrat or being a progressive, because many Democrats are not progressives, tragically, but one of the things about being to the left of center, shall we say, is that you're declaring independence, essentially. And one of the things about being right of center is that you're declaring that you're willing to march in lockstep with authority figures. So, Democrats is like herding cats.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Thank you for the call, Conrad. And Republicans are like, alpha dog. Everybody follows. So, we'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. David in New York City listening on WBAI. Hey, David, you called every Republican you could get?
Oh, hey, Tom. How are you? Well, I'm better off than most, so I can't whine about it. But, yeah, I'm one of the guys who lost our federal extension. And so
unemployment benefits.
A couple of friends said, yes.
Yeah,
and
I'm
so
sorry
today what we decided to do was, I'm doing better than others, but there's a lot of people hurting. So what we did was three of us decided to call Washington up. Mm-hmm. And 99% of the Republicans, we got a voicemail. And 100% of the Democrats, we got a supportive staff person. So,
wow.
That's my comment. Yeah.
What's the N or the P? What's the total number of people that you called?
Actually, we got through to we did this for like 2 hours. We got charged up on a couple of cups of coffee, and we did about 45 of them. And 43 of them, we got Cruz, McCain, everyone, Avon, Rand Paul, all answering machines, you know, services, and they'll call back. So, and listen, Tom, we really appreciate you pitching this thing. Some of these people here, they're getting their electric bills cut off. You know how the rest. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, this is a lifeline. This unemployment benefits. Let's not minimize this. When capitalism fails, this is one of the reasons that this government, I believe, that this country was created. And if that's just mythology, that's fine. But it's a useful mythology. Let's make it real in this day and age. It was part of the Democratic Party's platform from 1948 to 1988. That during times of economic crisis, the government should be the employer of last resort. They never should have taken it out of the party platform. We need candidates to be talking about it. Unemployment benefits, in my opinion, extending unemployment benefits is a no-brainer between it being the humane thing to do, the rational thing to do, and it's a stimulus to the economy. But B, I would go a step farther and say anybody who's been unemployed longer than X, you know, make it 30 weeks, 50 weeks, whatever you want, we can negotiate that. But anybody who's been employed longer than that period of time should immediately qualify for a government job. And we should, and that, those government jobs should be, you know, laying a national broadband fiber optic system, rebuilding our roads, rebuilding our bridges, replanting our forests. Reclaiming lands in ways that will sequester carbon. The list goes on and on of all these good things that could be done that you can pay people to do. And Franklin Roosevelt demonstrated during the Great Depression by cutting unemployment in half in the first 4 years of his administration that it is possible. So, David, I'm with you. I wish you the very best. I'm so sorry to hear that you're unemployed. Are you going to continue? By the way, this is a great kind of little grassroots thing. You and a couple of other unemployed people, are you going to continue this?
Well, if you want, we can. We'll download it and we'll send it to your website on the email. However you do that, we can do that. Sure, we'd absolutely.
Oh, that would be fascinating. Sure. That would be fascinating.
Thanks, Tom.
Unfortunately, I don't think I can play it on the air because I think New York State has a law. You know, the wiretapping laws. So I can't play something that where the other party didn't give consent, if both parties didn't give consent. But the results of it, certainly, give me a call tomorrow or the next day and just let me know, and we'll put you on the air and you can tell her.
Listen. Okay, good. Well, listen, Bud, one other tidbit. We listen to Canadian radio at night because we get a signal from Hamilton.
Right.
Did you know that the sand line pipeline, the shale coal? They laid off about 2,000 Canadian workers and brought in Croatian workers.
Oh, jeez. See, you know, welcome to the future of America. And Canada has gone right wing. And, you know, and here we go again. David, thank you for the call. Thanks for listening to BAI. Tom Arvin here with you, the True People's Media. Talk media for the rest of us, the place where smart people get their news. Tammy in Boulder, Colorado. Hey, Tammy, what's up?
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you. Few things I want to go over since I've been hearing you talking, so I'll try and make everything quick. Legally disabled, one of those people that have been affected by the food stamp reduction in this nation, to $15 a month on my very below poverty income.
Wow.
I have to visit a food bank twice a week to even, you know, make it.
Wow.
The other thing I wanted to bring up and to your attention is we have this big thing coming up here in Colorado where they're getting ready to privatize a highway that has already been paid for previously by a toll road in the 50s and the 60s and from Boulder to Denver. And it's apparently owned by Sachs Goldman or something.
Goldman Sachs, you mean?
Yeah, from what I've been reading on the internet. And they're trying to pass this through as of tomorrow without a lot of knowledge to our own government constituents down in the Denver offices. And the contract reads if they don't make the money they're anticipating on the toll road, then the state entirely is going to be responsible for paying them $50,000 a year.
Well, that's how it works with the private prison contracts. If the state doesn't maintain a certain occupancy rate, typically 90%, if it drops below that, the state has to pay whether there's prisoners there or not. It's totally bizarre. You know, some states are realizing how bad their
economy, how this serves the economy. You know, it just doesn't.
It doesn't. It serves the people who make the campaign donations to the people who are running for your state senate and your House of Representatives.
Right. So another crazy thing I came across the internet yesterday. Someone somewhere is saying that by 2016, Mr. Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to be sworn in as a presidential candidate.
Yeah. Don't believe everything you read on the internet. He was definitely not a natural-born citizen. He was born in Austria. He was an Austrian citizen. He's a naturalized American citizen. So there's no, I don't think legally there's any possibility. And frankly, after you know his affair and love child and all that was made, and the bitterness that Maria has, justifiably, I don't believe everything you read on the internet, I guess is the bottom line. Tammy, thanks for the call. And it's interesting. Shane is Googling around on privatized highways. We'll see if we can find out if that's actually happening or not. Marcia in Englewood, Florida. Or is it Marcia?
Marcia.
Marcia, how are you?
Fine. How are you?
Great. You have a question about voting rights.
Yeah. I don't understand for the life of me. If you went to every human being that's in this country, I can't imagine one of them that wouldn't say that they want their individual vote to count.
Right.
So how do you get it into the Constitution that it's a constitutional right for each person's vote to count?
Well, they didn't put it in the first place because they were afraid that slaves would claim that right. And not just slaves. There were a lot of people who were not of African ancestry who still weren't considered quote, white, who didn't qualify under the white laws in the North. You had indentured servants, you had recent immigrants, you had people who didn't speak English well, you had who were all white in skin, but they didn't qualify as white people under the laws over the eras. There's a great book written about this called How the Irish Became White. There's another book about it called How the Jews Became White. The framers of the Constitution, knowing that a significant portion, in fact, in some states like Georgia, a majority of the population were not, at least in their lifetime, going to be allowed to vote, did not put an explicit right to vote in the Constitution. And in fact, the right to vote in the Constitution didn't get put into the Constitution until the 1870s, and I can give you the exact year when the 15th Amendment was passed. Black suffrage, it was ratified on February 3rd, 1870. And it says the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. And here's the problem. Basically what that says is you can only, you can prevent people from voting on any other basis, right? You can prevent people from voting based on poverty. You can prevent people from voting because you don't like where they live. You just can't do it based on race or if they were previously a slave. And that's...
But my question is... Yeah. My question is... Hello?
I'm listening.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I do. I'm listening.
My question is, those amendments were made. Why can't we take it to the next step where absolutely no one can be...
You would have to amend the Constitution.
Regardless if you're a woman, regardless if you're gay, regardless anything, your health, your wealth, your anything.
Right.
You cannot be denied a right to vote.
Yeah.
Why can't that go into the Constitution?
It can. It would simply require an amendment to the Constitution. And that, and frankly, I think, if you were to associate that, the Equal Rights Amendment, for example, hasn't passed. Republicans are still filibustering that thing. It gets reintroduced every year by some Democrat. Ted Kennedy used to be the guy who introduced it every year. And, that simply acknowledged that women should have equal rights with men in the United States. That's simple. It was, there should be no discrimination based on gender or on sex was actually how it read. And that was never passed. So and in fact, I should amend my comments about the founders. They not only had African Americans and others, who couldn't vote, but all women couldn't vote. And in fact, women didn't get the vote until after African Americans did by about 70 years. So or 60 years. So, yes, we need we need a constitutional amendment that says that there is an affirmative right to vote. And in fact, if you look at the Bush v. Gore Supreme Court decision, when they ruled that they could stop the recount in the state of Florida, that they overruled the Florida Supreme Court, and they could stop the recount, which ultimately demonstrated that Al Gore got more votes in Florida than George W. Bush did. But it was a year later that we found that out. And it was right after 9/11, so nobody remembers it. But when they stopped that vote, they say in that decision, you can read it online on the Supreme Court's website, they said there is no affirmative right to vote in the Constitution of the United States, and therefore they felt safe just saying, yeah, we're gonna stop this thing. Marcia, thanks for the call, and thanks for listening to the program. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be celebrating Darwin's birthday. I'll have a conversation with Professor David Loy, founder of the Darwin Project and author of the new book, Darwin in Love. It's the rest of the story, just in time for Valentine's Day. And don't forget, democracy starts with you. Tag your it.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the show. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard, count on them to help protect what makes you, you. WIX, Wix.com, everyone deserves to have their own stunning site, and it's free. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. ITM Trading, America's trusted source for rare coins and precious metals. Web.com, you say it, they will build it. Granger, for the ones who get it done. Boston Beer, America's leading brewer of handcrafted, full-flavored beers. Geico, 15 minutes could save you up to 15%. And EcoWine.com, your trusted source for organic wines since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.